This is Channel 2.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker show here on Channel Radio in association with Biz Radio. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and the stonkingly gorgeous Jill Sirkin.
Oh, Susie Fish is just looking. I've told her that she doesn't have to do it with every... I'll wait. I don't need these presents till 24th.
Right.
Family coming on the 24th.
Go and pick them up.
Yeah. Because they'll get lost otherwise, won't they?
They could go anywhere.
Wayne Cunnington says, thought you'd be wearing your Santa hats today to keep warm.
No, it's next week, Santa hats. Mince pies and Santa hats are next week.
Yeah, we love a mince. It's the way you walk, isn't it?
Thank you for that. The Kent and Medway Business Summit is taking place on Friday the 13th of January. In the award-winning Sibson Building on the Canterbury campus of the University of Kent. That's the Kent Business School. Bringing together over 300 businesses, key policymakers and leading academics, it's the sixth annual summit and it will focus on the latest news from key projects and leading expert keynote speakers from across the county, alongside Q&A and debate on topics including productivity, sustainability, placemaking and skills. To celebrate the summit being back in its January slot for 2023, we're offering a discount for anybody that books this month. Do sign up and you can find out all about it and find the booking link by going to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/calendar.
Smashing. And a frozen food company is set to expand after offering employment support and training for those who've dealt with trauma, addiction, homelessness and prison. Cook, which is based on Sittingbourne's Eurolink estate, has been honoured with a Queen's Award for Enterprise in recognition of its RAW talent scheme. RAW stands for Ready and Working, and the project provides training and jobs to people facing obstacles to employment. And the business, which employs 1,700 people, has so far recruited more than 150 employees through the programme. So that's brilliant.
That's fantastic, isn't it? And they're giving opportunities to people that don't normally get opportunities.
You do know that the mohair from my exquisite jumper is coming on the microphone and just staying on it.
Is it static?
I don't know. It's just...
it's not moving.
You're going to find lots of... you're going to find lots of wispy mohair.
I made myself laugh.
That was quite funny. Did you make that one up?
Yeah.
I don't know how you do it, Paul Andrews.
Oh, no. Okay. Ashford Council have announced free Christmas parking in Ashford and Tenterton.
Oh, hallelujah.
On Friday the 16th and 23rd, it's free after 3 p.m. And on Saturday the 17th and Sunday the 18th, it's free all day. So you can go shopping in Ashford or better still, Tenterton, and park your car for nothing.
Well, why aren't Canterbury doing anything? They don't seem to be doing anything.
Get out of it,
there's no late night shopping. There's nothing.
Do you know, Ben Fitzharding, the leader of Canterbury Council, put a big Aren't We Clever post up on LinkedIn the other day.
Did you say no?
I typed this big missive saying, no, you're not. And then I thought, do you know what? I can't be bothered to argue anymore.
It is really, what were they being clever about, did he think?
This stupid zoning system.
They're not doing that.
They are.
These 15-minute cities. So there's Oxford, Canterbury, and there's one up north somewhere.
Bristol. Bristol, Edinburgh, Oxford and Canterbury now.
It is just...
It's bonkers. It's utterly bonkers.
They expect that my mother, who's 92, is going to get on a bicycle, do they?
No. Well, my point to Ben, which I never... he won't have seen it because I just couldn't be bothered anymore. My point was that we had an argument 2 months ago with him. You and I had an argument with him on Twitter about car parking charges in Canterbury. I own a business in Canterbury. It cost me 18 quid to park my car every day.
It's crazy.
To go to work, yeah?
In Canterbury?
Yeah. Absolutely. And when I faced him up about it, the leader of the council, he went, yeah, well, it's our only way of raising money. They've now come up with a zonal scheme where you can't drive in Canterbury between two zones. So they divided the city into four. If you cross from one to the other, you get fined £8
or £12. Disgusting.
Yeah. So I said, what if you live in zone one, but your kids are in school in zone two? How do you get them to school? What you do is you drive out of the city, you go round the city and come back in the other way. And you go, and that saves how much and what?
Yeah.
And anyway, there isn't a ring road around Canterbury. So how do you do that? Ah, part of the plan is, and this is where my argument lay, we're going to build a ring road.
Oh, my goodness.
And how much is that going to cost? £100 million. But so how much am I actually going to pay for car parking so that you can raise £100 million to build a ring road so that I can't drive in and park?
Well, you know what's going to happen. They'll ruin all the villages that are beautiful villages all around. And I believe that this ring road really is all about building more housing estates, which they are building everywhere all around Canterbury. And they're building solar factories, huge, like three rugby pitches, solar or football pitches of solar factories, when solar can go on existing buildings, of which there are lots. And Cliff, there's a whole other show there that we could discuss this, isn't there? Mm-hmm.
But like the chap next door, I've just met him.
With him, yes. Yeah. He's eco heating and all sorts.
On top of solar farms, on top of schools. And,
yeah, that's what they should be doing.
Yeah, and then selling the energy back to the school. So the school gets cheap energy. And then
it makes so much sense.
They keep the surplus.
I was in Canterbury last week seeing my lovely, your mother would approve, my acupuncturist, herbalist, for the vaccine damage. And hello, if you're listening, lovely acupuncturist in Stour Street. But they...
Was she called John?
No, it's a lovely man called Dominic.
I'm going to call him John, if that's all right.
Dominic Harbiston and Pippa,
all right,
his
John.
Lovely wife.
Yeah.
So he does my herbs for the vaccine damage. But I was so disappointed in Canterbury. Like, they've got these, I think I said, street market for Christmas. None of it's local. There's nothing that is local. There's no Kentish. And then there's loads of shops saying we are closing down, 50% off. And loads of empty shops and loads of homeless in the shops, you know, in the shop doors. Mm. There wasn't really much for me there.
It's the failure of government at both central and local level, I'm afraid.
So they're definitely going ahead with this 15-minute sitting.
Well, you know, I mean...
Don't they have to sort of ask us?
No, the problem is it's virtue signalling.
Yeah.
You know, Ben, I love Ben to bits. He's a really nice guy. But, you know, when he gets his political hat on, he just talks nonsense. And the fact is, it's virtue signalling. He's put this huge thing about, you know, we're going to do this. We've got vision. And some idiot from some think tank who came up with the idea is going, this is brilliant. This is strategic planning and it's best. Da, 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 da. You're going to get voted out in 2 years' time. You're not going to do anything. Yeah. And you're going to get voted out because Canterbury's a mess and it's one of the loveliest cities in the world and you've made a complete and utter mess of it.
Exactly. And let's not forget, there are, what, four or five schools in Canterbury, Barton Court, Langton's.
Simon Langton, yeah.
The couple of private schools, King's, loads of students, loads of universities.
Canterbury has 40,000 students out of a population of 80,000 people.
Exactly.
There's three universities.
And, Cliff, no A&E department.
Hmm.
Really?
In a city.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
A city with a cathedral.
It's got a hospital, but they close the A&E in the hospital.
They close the A&E, yes. So now I have to drive miles to Margate, which is, you wouldn't go to Margate, you'd die there.
Yeah.
Or
that's the
Ashford.
That's the idea.
Very well. Yeah. My grandmother was from Margate. Yeah.
There you are. Yeah. Margate's thriving. But, you know, it is a shame. And we need to, in fact, as I said, when I went to Deptford, I was actually very excited by that high street because it was selling yams and whole, you know, there's things you could
street
burrow
food.
About. Yeah. And clothes, you know, like quite ethnic clothes, like galabeyas and things.
Well, the funny thing was.
Do you know what a galabeya is?
No.
Dish dash? Kaftan.
I know what a dish dash is.
Yeah, galabeya in Egyptian, it's a galabeya. But, you know, they were selling sort of kaftans and robes and that because they've got a big...
Is there a big demand for them in England?
Yeah, there's a big ethnic...
No, I know there's an ethnic population. I was just wondering if everybody else needed one.
I tell you what, the thing about them is galabeyas, because I used to wear one in Cairo occasionally.
Yeah.
You can
lived in Cairo.
Yeah,
not very good for today.
Not
very good.
You get a draft up your carabao,
you would, and because they wear ship with it as well.
Of course they do.
Get even colder.
Yeah.
So with your ship on, your toes would get very cold.
Yeah.
But you can eat as much as you like in a galabeya.
Yeah, because no one can see.
You can just eat as much as you like. It's wonderful. I'll tell you another thing.
Is that Dennis Rousseau side?
yeah, exactly.
Ever and ever and ever. I bought a lovely dress from an independent shop in Harbour Street called Urbanista. It's going to be my Christmas Day dress, and the new husband hasn't seen it yet. It's very nice, dark red. It was a bit expensive. I nearly fainted, but I thought, oh, well, you know, I spent all this money on Darcy Greyhound. I might as well get myself a dress. And they gave it to me in an eco-friendly plastic bag. A paper bag.
Right.
And I walked home on Saturday. If you remember, it started torrentially snowing. Or was it Sunday? I can't remember.
It was Sunday.
Yeah. Sunday, yeah. And so I walked home from Whitswood to Tank. It's about 3 miles. And, of course, the paper bag was just disintegrating. Mm. And I realised that they're absolutely hopeless. You can't hold anything heavy because the bottom drops out and you can't go out in the rain in them. Mm. And it was torrential snow, if that's possible. Mm. Great big flakes of wet snow. So the new husband had to pop it under his parka. Uh-huh. And then he was going, Jules, if anybody sees me, because he looked like he was huge in his stomach because he had that and we had a couple of jars of honey and things that we bought. So he did look like a pregnant man.
Right.
And he said, oh, if anybody, I said, imagine if we bump into one of the neighbours that we haven't seen for a while where we used to live and they'll go, oh, he's put on a lot of weight, hasn't he?
You know? He'd go, no, he's pregnant, isn't he?
Yeah, but paper bags don't really work. I mean, I do get them, but we didn't have a bag for life because we weren't going shopping. We were going for breakfast.
We were going for breakfast
with Dan Keeler.
Yeah.
Have I taken you off the plot now?
Yeah, you have. I'm getting messages all over the place, and I'm losing the plot. And I don't want to do them anymore. I want to talk to Cliff.
I do. Should we find out about this space plug?
We shall. It's an absolute pleasure to welcome onto the Business Bunker Show, Mr. Cliff Pettit.
Cliff, Paul, thank you.
It's a pleasure to have you. Sorry about the preceding hour and 15 minutes.
Yeah. No, I was stepping into an episode of Relay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we normally have a counsellor here to help us with the show. But
yeah, we normally have a referee.
Yeah.
Well, that was Penny. You see, she was being.
Yeah,
perfect.
She would have been referee.
Yeah, she's always preferred me to you.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah, I'm missing you, Penny. I needed you.
Yeah. And he's cold. We've made our guests freezing.
So, Cliff, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, mate.
Cliff is from Space Plug. And what I want to do, I want to try and do this chronologically, if we can.
We'll give it a go. If nerves allow, give it a go.
Yeah. So, take us back before Space Plug. What were you doing?
So, I've done many things. I started off, I was very lucky I won a scholarship when I worked for British Telecom.
Right.
And so, you're a boffin?
No. Not really. But I went and did a business degree. I'd always done a bit of carpentry and DIY. My parents had separated when I was quite young and Grandad was a carpenter. So I've kind of been doing some carpentry since I was 10 years old.
Right, okay.
But being a child of the 80s or growing up, influenced by the 80s, it was getting into work and computers and technology and all of that. So I went back to university at 21. Which was University of Brighton, a fantastic business school.
Oh, wow, that
must
have been very cool.
Yeah, it was well revered at the time and still is. It's massively expanded now, but it's a great place to study and really enjoyed it. But come out of there really thinking I was going to have a corporate career with a blue chip idea. Yeah. Had won the scholarship to be there. And thought I was going to be one of these future captains of industry and go on into a graduate career. Really, I ended up going into pharmaceutical sales, which I really didn't enjoy very much. It was it scared me a little bit as a human being, to be honest. The scale of the drugs world at the time, the top 10 largest.
He was a drug dealer, is what
I was a drug
say.
Dealer. Yes, I do actually. It's quite a nice party piece. It's like Breaking Bad, isn't it? Yeah. But when you look at the top 10 countries in the world, 6 of them at the time were pharma sales. It was pretty scary, and it looks like the drug that I was actually taken on board to sell has caused tens of thousands of deaths in America,
to
my knowledge, even to this day.
What drug was it?
It was a drug called Vioxx. Mm. It was a drug called Vioxx, and it was pulled from market very quickly. But they believe there was a link, as I say, to all of these deaths. And so,
what was it supposed to do?
It was actually for osteoarthritis. It was a non-COX-2 inhibitor. So whilst it allowed the body to do what it needed to do with arthritis, it stopped the gastric protection in the stomach at the same time.
Yeah.
So the NSAIDs were, if you're I'm fortunate enough to be exposed to NSAIDs for a lot of years. You know, they can do your stomach a lot of damage.
Well, it's a bit like ibuprofen and things like that. You should always take them.
Ibuprofen's a
with
standard
food.
NSAID. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is
so
awful.
So this was for really aimed at going to be aimed at long term people that were going to be exposed to NSAIDs for a long time and hopefully give their stomach some protection. But they didn't realise at the same time it had some connotations with blood pressure, and they had about. I think the numbers in America were something like 160,000 heart attacks and strokes on that drug before it was pulled within 3 years. And I'd taken it, given it to parents and all sorts.
Did it take 3 years for them to pull it?
Yeah, it was the largest clinical trials in history, yeah, at the time. Yeah, you kind of wonder how you can have that scale and then not discover that there was the same side effect. There was a big
sounds
competitor.
A bit familiar to what's happening at the moment.
Yeah, the big competitor at the same time was a drug called Celebrex, and that was the same. They pulled all of these non-COX-2 inhibitors. So at the moment, the problem still exists for poor arthritic people that need long-term anti-inflammatories. It does cause some problems with the stomach.
All right.
But so I wanted to get out of that cruel world. Really.
Not surprised,
oh,
yeah.
Cliff, that's a whole big story.
Yeah, yeah. As I said, I've been helping Granddad and helping Mum do the house up and stuff since I was a kid, and so I decided to set up a little firm called the Happy Handyman, which was just me as a sole trader.
I wish you lived in Whitstable.
And managed to enjoy it. The idea just being to get some joy out of life. And
well, it's better than killing people, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Slightly better, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It felt nicer. Yeah. I had a bit of a problem with not charging anybody. That was my problem.
What, you're too nice?
Yeah, it was a bit difficult when poor ladies would ask you to come and fix a kitchen drawer, you know, and it takes you 3.5 minutes. You're like, I can't really charge you anything. So, yeah, I was not making very much money very quickly and going downhill quite quickly. And I helped a mate on a kitchen fit, and he was mucking around with these little L brackets at the back of this kitchen cupboard, and I'd carried an idea around in my head for about 20 years at the time.
Right.
And I said, we're not really still fitting kitchens like this, are we? I assumed one of the bigger companies would just have the idea and they would protect it or put it into the world. He said, yeah, how else are you supposed to do it? And
just like that, he said it, didn't he?
So I said, yeah, okay. He did, actually. That was Tim, my mate Tim Haynes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Afternoon, Tim, if you ever hear this. He did, how else are you supposed to do it? And I thought, well, I know. I've carried this idea for a long time. So literally that night, I went and phoned my dad, who was only a window cleaner. We weren't a wealthy family, and raised some money to go and get a patent application for my little idea.
Wow.
So we borrowed $3,000 from Dad. And then it just started, really. It started from there. I'd never forget drawing up a space plug. I've still got the document on my computer somewhere.
Right.
This little space plug that was literally drawn up in Word. I had no design talents and no CAD or anything like that. It was me and a computer trying to make the best impression on a computer screen I could.
Right.
And I've still got that on my laptop. And
you could turn that into an NFT now or something, can you?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Who knows?
What's an NFT?
Oh, they're these digital art things that trade for millions of quids.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, blimey, even I don't know about them.
No,
I don't get that. So, we managed to, and that's pretty much the only time I've ever spent proper money with Spaceplug. Everything else has just been done on a shoestring and working what we want, but we always knew the legal side of it had to be protected.
So you had this idea which you've been carrying around. I don't want to get too technical here, but I just want people to understand exactly what it is that you've created here. So the L brackets are like an L-shaped piece of metal that you screw things to in a cupboard.
Absolutely. Usually with a kitchen unit, we have something down the back of our kitchen units, particularly in the UK, called a service void. And what we were doing at the time would be using two of these little L brackets, one on each ear of this kitchen cabinet, and either screwing over the top of the back of the unit or through the back of the unit one way or another. And it always seemed blatantly obvious to me that all we needed was a little adjustable spacer that would take the lateral pressure in the middle of this kitchen unit, and it just enable you to drill through anywhere in the back of the kitchen unit, line it up with wall studs, move it, have it accessible, And just whack a screw through. It's ever so easy. It's a simple three-step process. Right. And with a kitchen unit, you know, you're kind of going down to from 10 bits a kit to two.
Right, okay.
It's just faster, easier, more professional looking. It's a nicer way of doing the job. And gradually people have come on board with the idea. So
you carried this design idea with you ever since seeing people do this with a kitchen and going, you don't want to do it like that, you want to do it like this.
Exactly. That's what it became. That's what it became. So we put the patent application in. The funny story was that, but literally when you're an inventor, it's almost like the business idea of being the handyman. You become the jack of all trades and the master of none, because you're going to take this thing from an idea through to selling in shops, Screwfix and Amazon.
Yeah.
So driving into, we had the patent idea, so now it's about can we actually make it into a reality. Had tried a few plastics development, and I'm driving around the country meeting injector moulders and people like that, and got lost in my hometown at the time was Winchester.
Right.
I'm actually from Bromley, but at the time it was Winchester. And in my rear view mirror, as I was doing my 3-point turn to go, oh, I'm lost here, saw PDC, and it was the plastics development company. It was literally right on my doorstep, and created a relationship with those guys who I don't think are around anymore. But they were a marvellous help to me and got the thing off the ground and helped get me in touch with a manufacturer who was an amazing help as well, PM UK. And I think Roy and Gary, I think, have sold up and moved on their businesses as well.
So when was this? When was this happening?
So this was this was probably about 2010, about 2012, sort of 10 to 12 years ago. Mm. The patent had moved forward and the patent got to grant, and we'd had an idea of what it was we wanted to make. Between a few connections and just keeping hard at it, eventually we got some prototypes. And I started getting on the phone. Who might want to buy this thing? Who might want to buy this thing?
So did you go to big companies like Howden's or that, or did you start small?
We did. I knocked up a little prototype from some what we call DPM, damp-proof membrane, and a couple of poker chips. And because it was even before 3D prototyping for my budget. Right. You know, it was around, obviously, but not for me. Yeah. And had a couple of meetings with a bit of rolled up plastic and a couple of poker chips. And I've still got that rolled up bit of plastic and a couple of poker chips. And we went with a couple of big companies. And for me, the big thing was I was very lucky to walk into Wren Kitchens. Mm. And Wren actually at the time was run by a man called Armando Sanchez. And even though they were a big corporate company, Armando put his photograph and his personal mobile telephone number up in the Wren showrooms at the time.
Right.
Wow. So you could literally just phone the MD.
Right. It was so hands-on.
Obviously, there was a lot of protection for most MDs in that situation. So he was the first that I was straight on the phone to.
Right.
So perhaps that's a lesson to MDs. Make yourself more accessible and perhaps you'll be first to the good ideas. Mm. So Armando met me I remember doing the usual thing, preparing this great PowerPoint presentation and slides and all the rest of it. And he said, no, none of that stuff, Cliff. I just want to see if it works.
I
went running up the road to Screwfix and had to buy a drill and buy some screws and all the rest of it. And we screwed a couple of units to the wall in the back office of the branch in Southampton.
Right.
And I got him to do it. I said, well, there's no point in me doing it. I know how to do this. You know, these L brackets are a nightmare. I said, do that screw up. And he automatically walked around the unit. I said, no, you're not allowed to stand there. The units are there, you know, so you have to do it from there. And he said, well, you can't do it. I said, I know, exactly. That's why we just want to put one screw in from the front. He said, I like it. We're having it. And a few months later, we had a meeting with Malcolm Healy, who was the actual owner of Wren Kitchens, and we went up to see him at the Nest in Barton Humber. And
what's the Nest?
The Nest is the kind of, hence Wren Kitchens.
Oh,
is their headquarters.
Oh, I see.
Which they're fantastically built right on the edge of the Humber, so they can literally take all the stuff in from all their board that ships in on big carrier ships can go straight into the factory.
There's
no transportation.
So
he's been
innovative.
Very clever the way he set it up. He's a very clever man.
Where's he from originally with his name?
Malcolm Healy was the original man to set up MFI.
Oh, okay.
And he'd built MFI, which he'd sold in 1988 at an absolute peak time, and then got involved in eBuyer and stuff in America. And so he'd come back and with his eBuyer success and some various other things, after the sad decline of MFI after he'd left, I think he was determined to build something new and better even than MFI, and that's how he came around with his Wren Kitchens, and they're doing incredibly well at the moment. Mm. They really are. I know from my sales to them, they're definitely growing and growing fast. So
well, kitchens is probably good. One of the main expenses of a house, apart from sort of roofs and things, but interiors.
He noticed exactly that at that time there was a big gap in the market. Nobody had filled the whole of MFI with having showrooms locally. So he'd really worked out that if we put out some big showrooms again, we should be able to do big volumes. Mm. And that's how it worked for Malcolm. And he's done incredibly well with it. And now there's huge numbers just growing and growing at the moment.
Cool. So here you are on the Humber with your little plastic thing.
Well, I wasn't. That was the trouble, Paul. I was down. By this time, I was now living in Eastbourne.
Right.
A nice lady I was dating, sadly, had just lost her dad.
Right.
The night before, I was supposed to be in North Yorkshire.
Right.
And so I'd obviously not wanted to leave her that night, and decided I was going to set off in the morning for a meeting. I think it was due at about 11 o'clock or something.
Right.
So I sort of left about 5 o'clock in the morning. It was pouring with rain. And the sat-nav decided to go quirky and stuck me on B roads between Eastbourne and North Yorkshire. And I kept fighting it, trying to get back to the main roads. The stress and the phone calls to up there, you're going to meet a billionaire.
Right.
And you're having to drive on the morning, which obviously I would have got a hotel the night before. Had personal circumstances been any different at all? And it took me about 7 hours, 8 hours, I think, maybe more. I just remember knowing I was 4 hours late by the time I got there for my first ever big meeting.
They wait for you, or what happened?
He was very good. He was very good. I think he just did it pure business-like. He's a very straightforward man, Mr. Healy. And it was, even though I was very late, we communicated. And so I was wheeled in and had the idea and my setup dissected. And he was a bit sort of miffed by how expensive it might have to be, because it's a very small thing. But used to being produced in their millions. But of course, I'm not producing in my millions yet. Sure. He's my first customer, so the prices aren't quite what Mr. Healy would be used to. So he seemed quite put out and perturbed by the end of it. And I can remember, left the nest and drove up the road to the local co-op and bought a packet of fags and bought a Diet Coke, you know, stood in their car park and lit a fag and kicked the wall and really broke my big toe. And how could you be 5 hours late for the meeting of your life? And somehow I got a purchase order 3 weeks later.
Wow.
And, okay. At the time, I was actually on Universal Credit, and without that first big order, it might never have happened. So I owe Mr. Healy a lot. And,
it's uplifting, this whole story. I love it. Yeah. Absolutely love it.
Bless you. Thank you,
Julia. Isn't that amazing?
It's been a good trip. It's been a good trip. That's so, above all everything.
So I want to explore. You got this order. How did you fulfil that order?
Well, we had some tooling on order. That's the only time we've gone outside of the country. Was actually the tooling itself was made in China,
right.
And then shipped back to the UK.
Right.
So Malcolm's given us our order. We know we can invest now. This stuff is on its way. We get the tooling back from China. We've made some production in China just to check everything works, and then brought it back to our firm in Tunbridge Wells, and. It didn't work.
It didn't work. What happened? It fell off the wall?
We had about 6 weeks of the nice China company. We're going to fly engineers over from China. And then we were going to put the tool in actually onto a plane. I mean, these things are about 2 tons of stuff.
Right.
You know, it's not very big, but it's solid steel. So it does weigh a lot. And we were going to put it back on a plane to China at one point. And eventually, which is why I always owe to Gary and Roy at PM UK, they managed to get it all working, and we got some production. And it all started rocking and rolling. So, and from there, we never really looked back. We've just gradually spread the idea and spread the word. And I think what they call gaining critical mass is how they describe it, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
And all your kitchen fitters need to know about it. And how do you contact all of those?
Well, it's pretty impossible. It's rather a niche market to attack.
Yeah, I've got a lovely kitchen fitter called Doug, and I will put you in touch with him.
Make sure
lovely.
Doug looks us up. We get good 5-star reviews wherever we sell, whether it's Amazon or Screwfix and a number of other places. They're all listed on our website.
Right, you know what I'm going to ask now, Cliff?
Go on.
Is there any other way that you can get it made not in China?
No, it's not made in China. No, okay. It's made in the UK.
So what was the
tooling
China
was flown back from China.
The tooling.
So now it's actually made in Sussex.
And I love that.
It was Tunbridge Wells.
Now I'm happier.
It's been to Tunbridge Wells until Roy and Gary gave up their firm and sold their firm. Mm. And it was then with a company in Maidstone, ICM. Mm. That became difficult because they were so far away from me, where I was now living in Eastbourne.
Yeah.
And we've just found a lovely producer called Masona Plastics, who are on the Whitesmith Industrial Estate. It's a lovely one of these forest places, you know, where they're literally trying to blend into the rural community.
Where is that?
All in woodland, they do make a bit of plastic, I'm sorry, but we are working on that
as well. Oh, we have to sometimes. But where is that? The woodland
and that's now in Whitesmith, Uckfield.
Oh, Uckfield.
So
just
up the road from Eastbourne. So excellent. Yeah, it literally is a Sussex project, really, to be honest now.
That's amazing.
And can I just ask, because I'm just fascinated by this.
Go on.
So you've used lots of different production companies to make it.
Yeah.
What happened to the original tooling? Do you move that around?
That comes with you. Yeah.
Oh, does it?
So a bit of advice for everybody. Yeah, if you might well get the opportunity, if you're doing something similar, for the moulder to pay for it. Mm. And then you obviously get the benefit of never paying him back.
Mm.
But it's quite common, hopefully, if an injection moulder thinks you've got a decent idea, is to invest. And what we did was amortise that investment. And so, as we ordered from them, he got his investment back on the tooling.
Right.
But what that meant was the tooling was always mine.
Right.
And so as the companies have had to change over the years, it's always remained mine. So, we are due some more new soon. So there's lots of new products on the drawing board, and we need some tooling soon, I think, for the existing stuff, and there's some new products coming. So,
we're going to talk about that, or not talk about that in a minute.
We'll
talk about some investment in a minute. I just want to kind of wrap up on the first part of this journey with Space Plug, which you're now producing, and you've made reference a couple of times to the fact that you sell through Screwfix and Amazon and places like that. Any idea how much you're shipping at the moment? How many plugs you sell a year?
We do. They're adjustable spacer fixings,
officially. Of course they
now.
Are. Yeah,
they're
yeah.
made by Space Plug. It's the whole Hoover and vacuum cleaner
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah, we're now under slap wrists if we keep calling them Space Plugs. They are Space Plug adjustable spacer fixings.
Right.
And we've just hit 7 million of them.
Wow,
now.
Okay.
7 million in the world. We'll turn over about £400,000 this year, all from two flats in Eastbourne.
Wow.
There's only me and my brother in the business.
Right.
He does all the packing and all the hard work and all of that stuff, and I sit on the laptop and try and sell them and try and expand the market and come up with some more ideas.
Right.
And so we have no premises, no factory. Ken works with us really brilliantly from Masona, so he will produce them himself, bless him, and he'll put them on his own shelves.
Right.
And we only pay for them when we buy them from him.
Wow. Okay.
So between having no premises and no storage and no offices, it means that we just about tick over and leave something for expansion. So, we're doing okay. It's a lean business model, but we could do with selling a few million more, that's for sure.
Okay. But, you know, we had a quick discussion about this before we went on air. Even with a product like this, which is so obvious once you show it to someone, it's still not easy to get people to buy into it, is it?
That's my biggest shock.
Yeah.
My biggest shock was I always knew it was going to be difficult to get through the door with people, you know, like talking to Howdens, talking to Symphony or talking to Moores. And you're kind of like, but once you get through the door, when you've got all these 5-star reviews all over Amazon, you've got these 5-star reviews all over Screwfix and people just keep telling you, it's a no-brainer, it's a no-brainer, it's brilliant. Why would you do it anywhere else? And you kind of think, well, why aren't they all buying them?
Yeah.
You know, and if somebody can answer that still, I guess a few pence on top, in the, even per cabinet, is just a couple of pence, is enough to put them off rather than do it in a nicer way. But we think we've got that beat.
Okay.
We think we've got that problem beat now, and there's a new product coming January the 10th, which is going to save the manufacturers some money.
Right.
Hopefully they'll pay some of that to us for some new products. And, everyone will be a winner now. So
okay.
We think we finally got the last piece of the jigsaw. And that's coming out January the 10th.
Okay,
and
now I know you can't tell us much about it
because
it's all big secret squirrel. But you have got a product. I've seen it. I've seen the concept of it. And Cliff is absolutely right. It's going to save people some money. It's going to make things a lot easier. But from my point of view, as a business person myself, I have great empathy with you. Even with good products like yours and obvious products like yours, people are reluctant to change.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
That is the biggest hurdle to overcome. You know, I've had people stood in front of me going, I love your idea. I'm not going to buy it because that's not how we do it. No, but of course it's not how you do it because it hasn't happened before.
It is the ultimate dichotomy of the human condition, isn't it?
It is,
we hate change, and yet we sort of hate the idea that we're stuck in habit.
Yeah, exactly.
And that we want something new.
Yeah.
So
okay,
the human condition just does this whole circle all the time.
Yeah.
I love that. That's new. Mm. Oh, but I don't want to change. And so it is,
yeah. I mean, I have to say, I'm a bit like that with technology, with phones and stuff.
Me as well. Yeah.
I go, you know, my phone's really old now and I need a new one, but I really don't want to buy a new one because I know what a faff it's going to be.
Just when they update it.
Yeah, yeah, it's going to be a faff transferring all my stuff to the new phone, even though my old phone doesn't work properly anymore. And we just are very reluctant to change, aren't we?
Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah.
Once you know your way around, it's terrible.
Yeah.
But I guess that's us being non-millennials, I think.
Probably.
The people that take in the updates on their phones every couple of days and then slipping straight into the new systems are a bit more open to it than us.
Yeah. You need a six-year-old, don't you, to do it for
exactly.
you?
Yeah.
Cliff, I love your story. It's been a fantastic story. And I'm full of admiration for what you've achieved.
Bless you, sir.
You know, from idea through to delivery has been a journey. It's been an interesting journey.
It's not over yet, Paul.
And it's not over yet. It's about to kick into its next phase.
Absolutely.
So you just made a reference there very quickly to investment. Are you looking to...
Well, there's kind of two things that I'd really want to get across today. One is that if you're anything to do with the kitchen industry, whether you're a fitter, whether you're a designer, whether you're a manufacturer, whether you're a seller, it'd be really good if you could look at the new product. And the new product comes out January the 10th. And all you've got to do that is go over to spaceplug.com/countdown. And we've got a list of people there that are going to get the brand new brochure, the new videos that we'll, and T-shirts and stuff. There's even some physical with it. But if you're at all involved in the kitchen industry, you want to get your name down on that list, that would be very useful.
Right.
And as I say, the second thing really is to put it out there. We're a growing company. We've got places to go. We've still got some new products on the drawing board. And if you're interested in investing with us, come along and have a word because, it looks like we're going places and there's things happening and I don't want to do it on my own for much longer.
Yeah, absolutely. Fantastic. So if you've got a bit of spare cash hanging around and you'd like to invest in something that's going to really hit the market, then do that. Just give us a shout for the website again, Cliff.
So it's www.space-plug.com. And you can have a look around the existing product there. And if you add the /countdown, you'll see there's a little form to register yourself for some stuff coming out on January the 10th.
We look forward to that. We're going to look forward with bated breath to the unveiling on January the 10th.
Jules is signing up now.
Yeah, she is. Yeah. Absolutely. Cliff Pettit, Space Plug, thank you so much for that. A brilliant, brilliant story.
You're very welcome.
It's uplifting.
Thank you.
I feel happy having heard that.
Yeah. What tune did I get, by the way?
I only do it for the first guest.
Yeah.
Because
but when you come on next time, make sure you get
you'll
on
be
first.
And you can be first and I'll give you a tune
make
then.
Penny go second next time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
To be honest, the cheesy tunage started as an accident. The only reason that we played a tune early in the show is because in the early days, the technology in this studio didn't work very often. And people go, I can't hear anything. Or the mic doesn't work. So I'd play a record so I could run around here with my screwdriver and go, oh, blah, 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 change the headphones and everything.
As long as you didn't come up with Summer Holiday, that would have been all
yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you see, some of it can be quite cheesy.
Oh, yeah. Some of it's quite obscure as well.
Obscurely cheesy. Yeah,
yeah. But going back to what you've done, Cliff, I mean, it is really exciting. You were on Universal Credit. Your dad, a window cleaner, lent you $3,000.
Yeah,
it was just right from scratch. I love that. I love what you've done.
Thank you.
The fact you were late for the meeting, and I love the guy with the Spanish name. What was
his
name?
It's a bit all real. It's a bit real. So Armando Sanchez is now the MD.
Is he Spanish or where's he from?
Yeah, no, he's Spanish American. Mm-hmm. Spanish American, he was. And
he's now managing director of where?
He's now managing director of eBuyer. And a nice man called Mark Pullen has taken over from.
And what's eBuyer? What's eBuyer?
eBuyer was is kind of a big electronics. If you're, I think it's another one of these things. It's for the under 30s or under 40s or something. Mm. But nowhere to go and buy the electronics. It was a big wholesale system, which in itself was a big invention. Malcolm got in touch with it with him. My understanding is it was kind of a teenager with an idea. And Malcolm invested with him, and they did incredibly well with eBuyer. And after he did well there, and he's always had lots of other business investments, and decided to go back for it with his kitchen.
I also love the fact of Malcolm being on the Humber, on the River Humber, for those of you listening overseas.
It's a very impressive setup.
Yeah, and I mean, from Eastbourne, could you chug things up on the river? Or
no, I don't think so.
Could you row over in a canoe?
Can you got a boat up there? Yeah.
You strike me as the kind of man that would. I could see you.
Certainly,
you know,
if we needed
Captain,
to, we would. Yeah,
Captain
yeah.
Cliff.
Yeah.
Yeah, in a kayak.
Yeah. That's kind of the best thing about being an inventor. You know, you're just always problem solving.
Well, they want us off the roads, don't they? They don't want us to have a car.
Absolutely. So, and we should be. There should be better ways at the moment.
Well, I always say that we don't use our waterways enough, really. And, you know, we've lost a load of our ferries and things that we used to have.
Absolutely. I can never work out why there's so many Arctic trucks on the road.
There's so much now as well, more than ever since COVID for some reason.
It's and very strange to me. You get that they needed locally, but you can't see them on the M1, why it's necessary up and down.
They're everywhere. And what I also noticed, heard today on the news, that the Felixstowe strike, which has been going on for months and months, the sort of boaty people, shipping people.
It's a container port.
Thank you. Has just been called off. Right. And they offered them, I think it was 8% something, and £1,000 sort of as a one-off.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons my car's been delayed.
Is it?
Yeah, because all the components were sat in a container on the dock side there, not being unloaded.
We need to use much more of our shipping, I believe.
Right. We've got not long left of the show, and we've still got quite a bit of information to impart. Not least of which is I'm coming back with my schools programme.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I do a free schools programme called 30-30, in which I take 30 business owners into a school to talk to 30 A-level students about the world of work. And we're back after the lockdown and shutdown. We've had 2,000 students through the programme already, but for the last 2 years we had to stop because of the pandemic and the lockdowns. But we're back in 2023.
And they would love to speak to inventors like Cliff.
Absolutely, yeah.
Inspiring.
Who wouldn't?
Yeah, yeah, I'd love to drag Cliff along to one of them. But anyway, our next one is on January the 11th. It's at the Haysbrook School in Tunbridge. And I'm looking, I've already got 15 confirmed businesses that are coming, so I'm looking for 15 more. If you'd like to come along and speak to young people about the world of work and your industry, then we would love to have you. It's only 2 hours, 9 till 11, on January the 11th at the Haysbrook School, Tunbridge. You can find out all about the programme by going to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/30-30. It lists it all there, and there's a booking link to say that you'd like to come along. So do join us on the 11th of January.
Kent Pub has won an award for having the best pub garden. It's the Blacksmith Arms in Cuddam, which is near Sevenoaks. I've never heard of Cuddam, near Sevenoaks, and it's transformed its outdoor space with a patio and plants, pergola, how very Italian, covered function area, and outside bar and kitchen next to a wildflower field. It also has space for a marquee, which is used by local bands to play at the pub. I need to go and visit that pub. I'm going to take a photo of it immediately.
Yep.
I love a free house.
In spring 2023, a brand new business community space is due to open on the outskirts of Tenterton on the A28. The new space consists of four buildings set in landscape grounds with an on-site car parking. There's co-working and hot desking availability for one day a week with a range of options. Hold on. Sorry, trying to remember.
You can't get the staff, Cliff.
Yeah, I remember.
I struggle, you know, sometimes.
Yeah. Membership of the co-working space is all-inclusive and offers ultra-high-speed Wi-Fi, tea, coffee, shower facilities and much more. There's also a range of private offices and offices to suit from one desk to six desks, all-inclusive rents. Anyway, there's lots going on. It's the Trading Post Tenterton. It's a business community space serving the Weald of Kent. You can find out all about it by going to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/TP-Tenterton. TP-Tenterton.
And Wayne Cannington, listening in Northamptonshire, so he doesn't say AOP. He says, it's a heartbreaking story, Cliff, about working for the pharmaceutical industry and seeing so many then become that ill, isn't it? Reminds me of that drama called Dope Stick. You'll have to watch it. Michael Keaton, doctor duped into pushing OxyContin. Right. OxyContin, I don't know if I'm saying that right. And then his patients and so many others then became ill and addicted. Dope Stick, have a look. Story, though, Cliff, of creating a revolutionary product. Wren Kitchens, they're popular local to me, he says.
Yeah, they're doing very well. They're doing some nice showrooms and some nice kit there. So,
But it is, have a look at Dope Stick. I've seen it. I haven't watched it yet.
I will. I'll have a look at that.
Yeah. Wi-Fi hubs are offering a place for people to charge their phones. Could be installed in Kent for the first time. I have a little power thing that I carry around with me.
Yeah, me too.
The BT hubs, street hubs, which are designed as a modern alternative to the phone box, a part of the telecom giant's plan to boost digital connectivity across the UK. Bosses want to erect four units in Ashford Town Centre and say they'll be funded through adverts shown on state-of-the-art LED screens. Does LED use electric?
Yeah.
Not very much.
But not a lot.
Yeah, but aren't we supposed to be sort of stopping all this electric stuff and having...
You can't stop electricity.
Having solar.
But solar only generates electricity. Yeah, everything in the world is driven by electricity.
Yeah.
Every modern thing is driven by electricity. You can't stop not having electricity. It's how you generate it that's the interesting stuff, and then how you consume it with light-emitting diodes, LED, and other halogen-type things that they had before that. is about consuming less electricity to achieve the same thing.
I just carry a power bank in my handbag. But anyway, they claim the hubs can provide improved 4G and 5G coverage, allow free calls to emergency numbers, and can monitor the air quality in the immediate area while also being used as touchscreen maps. I think it's a bit Big Brother. It sounds a bit
BT,
fishy to me.
BT have just come screaming up against some blooming obvious. Again, Cliff and I were talking about...
5G?
Before we came on air... No. Before we came on air, we were talking about unintended consequences of things that people do. And BT came up with a massive one, which has really caused them a big problem. As of January 2022, they were due to start moving everybody off the old public telephone switch network, the PTSN, and put everybody onto broadband phones, voice over IP phones. And in fact, my phone at home was switched. We were the very first ones in the first week of this. We were switched over, and I now no longer have a dedicated home phone. I have a phone plugged into my router. Of course, everybody then made the very obvious statement that if your power goes down, and your router switches off, you can't even make emergency calls. You can't call 999. And people like my mum that have an emergency button, it don't work anymore.
No.
So they've had to stop the rollout while they have a think about that. But you'd have thought they'd have thunk about it before they actually announced it and started doing it.
You see, they need someone like Cliff. You know, someone that actually thinks things through.
They need someone with a brain cell is what they need. Yeah.
They do indeed.
They can't be talking about me.
Yeah.
No. It's actually called Dope Sick. Sorry, did I say stick? I don't know. But Wayne's saying it's sick, not stick. Dope Sick.
Thank you for that. I'm going to look that up.
Yeah. But it's relevant now to nowadays with all these AstraZeneca and Pfizer problems that we're having. So it's very relevant what you've been through.
Escape room entrepreneurs have opened a family fun entertainment centre in the middle of a town. Owners of the Panic Room Gravesend have transformed the 13,000 square foot unit at the back of a former BHS store into a hub of futuristic and arcade style games. Since opening 6 years ago, Alex and Monique Souter have expanded their escape experience to online games, axe throwing, and they've opened two more branches, one in Essex and one in Niagara Falls in America, as you would.
That's where else would you go from?
Yeah,
there?
Would you? Yeah, you go pop Essex, to Essex and then Niagara Falls, yeah.
Yeah.
The new site at the St. George's Centre is their newest business venture and a next step in their self-proclaimed mission to make Gravesend a place to go for a fun day out.
DG East on the Twitter, DG East number one, numero uno, says, "Hi, Jules Serkin and him, Vanilla Ware. Please can you give a shout out for a business being frustrated by the slow rate of deliveries?" So is he alluding to Felixstowe?
Well, he's alluding to the fact that you can't get a new car delivered for whatever
at
reason.
All.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also Casey Canine, the Greyhound, who's an avid listener, says, "Hi, Jules Serkin. Glad to see that the love of my life, Darcy, is recovering today. Please give her a shout out on the Business Bunker."
There you go.
There you go.
Folkestone and Hythe Council have got a green business grant scheme. The council have introduced a green business grant scheme to help smaller businesses become more energy efficient. Grants of up to £10,000 may be available to your business, or up to £25,000 in exceptional circumstances. The scheme will currently run until the 31st of March 2024. To find out more about this grant scheme, if you go to folkestone.works/greenbusinessgrant. That's folkestone.works/greenbusinessgrant.
And Seven Oaks Chamber, why not join Matthew Isles? Is it Isles?
Yeah,
I-L-E-S.
Yeah.
From Quercus Wines at his bar, Boucher. On the green in Westram for a Christmas wine tasting and talk. This meeting is supported by Westram Town Council and they'll also share updates on any new initiatives in the town. It's December the 14th and you can book at sevenoakschamber.com, event Westram, or go to kentbusinessradio.co.uk.
Fantastic. We did mention this last week, but I want to mention it again because I'm a bit excited about this.
Are you?
Yeah, planners are hoping to have the inland surfing space, which will generate artificial waves and be known as the Sea Hive, open by 2025. It's planned for land at former colliery Bettshanger Country Park near Deal and will attract thousands of visitors to the area each year. An application for it has been submitted to Dover District Council, alongside plans for a 120-bed luxury hotel, a spa and a gym. The overall master plan, see what they did there?
Master plan.
Yeah, for the 15-acre site, absolutely. This show is produced to within an inch of its life, Cliff.
Yeah.
The overall master plan for the 15-acre site will feature a wave garden cove, surf lagoon at its centre, which can create more than 20 different wave types from 50 centimetres to 2 metres, providing rides of up to 15 seconds long for all ages and abilities. There'll also be 15 accommodation pods, a wellness centre with yoga and fitness zones, cold water therapy, meditation pavilions and a splash pool.
Oh, it sounds amazing.
That sounds like it's going to be really good fun.
Sounds cold.
It does sound cold, yeah.
Cold as this room.
You don't want to do that in the snow.
They come and turn us up as well and I'm still freezing. I've got like a draft coming right down here. I might bring a tent next.
A draft.
Week. Cold. Can I kindly say hello to my...
Go for it.
Because she's out there shopping with my credit card.
Oh no.
Because it's her birthday today and she's out there freezing.
What's her name?
She's got a freezing cold nose and she's waiting on us.
Her name is
so,
not freezing cold nose.
Happy birthday to my partner, Bernie.
Bernie.
Happy birthday, Bernie.
Big love, babe.
Yeah.
Is she Bernadette, really?
She is indeed.
Bernadette.
Yeah. Bernie. She's Bernie.
Yeah.
Happy birthday,
what
Bernie.
But there
the
is a song.
It's like to a gasp.
Yeah.
But the,
Bernadette.
Yeah. Oh, I see. That's been said before, I think. There is a song,
right.
Bernadette, by the Four Tops.
Right. We've reached the end of the show, so you've got to shut up.
Play.
Yeah. I want to say a huge thank you to our two guests today, Penny Williams, the Big Plan Group, and fantastic Mr. Cliff Pettit of Space Plug. Thank you so much to my stockily good co-host Jules Serkin. We'll be back with another